First off, futilitarianism. What's the point? Is the point that much of our current lives are pointless, material at best, but all that's material turns out to be immaterial? Futilitarianism, neoliberalism, and production of uselessness is the rather grim title of a work by Neil Vallely, who is a political and social theorist and currently a research associate at the Centre for Global Migrations at the University of Otago, and he's on the line from Dunedin now. Kia ora, Neil.
Kia ora, Brian. How are you?
I'm very well, but I'm wondering whether I need to be very depressed. Futilitarianism.
No, there's not. No hope.
It sounds so depressing.
It does. It sounds like a bleak title, but I'm here to reassure you that it's actually quite an optimistic book.
What is this, the meeting of Buddhism and economics?
It sounds a bit like it, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Futilitarianism, the title and the kind of main theory in the book is, it's essentially the opposite of utilitarianism. So it's kind of a word that many of us may know, many of your listeners may know. But essentially utilitarianism is a basic definition of utilitarianism is that if each of us kind of maximizes our utility in every decision that we make, then it will ultimately lead to the greatest happiness of the greatest number of people. So it's a kind of majoritarian ethics.
Who was the brains behind that particular phrase, that word, and the idea?
As Jeremy Bentham.
Ah, yes.
Yes. So kind of English Enlightenment philosopher from the kind of late 1700s, early 1800s. Oh, sorry. Late 1700s, early 1800s. And so for Bentham, that was his kind of basic premise was that if each individual just, you know, decides that they will maximize the thing that's most useful for them, if we aggregate all those endeavors, it will lead to a social kind of equilibrium.
Where he saw utility in the 21st century, you see futility.
Yes, yes. So my argument, really, futilitarianism is that we've reached an era, where utility has kind of flipped into futility. So my argument really is that what futilitarianism is what occurs when each of us kind of maximize our individual utility. So this might be, and I'm sure many of your listeners know this well, working longer hours, working weekends, getting an education or training, which often comes with getting into debt and so on and so forth. And instead of that leading to a kind of greater happiness of the greatest number, it actually leads to a worsening of our kind of collective and social conditions and increasingly our kind of ecological conditions. So in this sense, futilitarianism leads to the kind of greatest unhappiness of the greatest number. And that's what I'm trying to kind of tease out in the book.
There's been a lot of discussion, Neil, about the ecological implications of our current way of living in modern industrial society, even post-industrial society. But what evidence is there that we're any less happy now than we were, say, in the 19th century or even the 20th?
I think that's a fair question, and I think that comes down to the kind of slipperiness of the idea of happiness. And that is a fundamental problem as well for utility. It's always been a problem with utilitarianism as a concept, in the sense that who judges what is useful, who judges utility essentially, and under those conditions, because of that, utilitarians often being used in kind of nefarious ways, you know, to justify colonial expansion or justify inequalities of capitalism, because things like happiness and well-being and utility are quite slippery terms. They're not objective facts, and they're constructed through kind of political struggles, constructed through kind of social practices. So the idea that the evidence that we might have that we are less happy now or more happy now really is quite a difficult thing, I think, to ascertain. There are many theorists who or kind of social scientists who would argue that we can. For me, it's a kind of very problematic concept in itself.
I mean, there's you could talk about the experience. Okay, I'll put my own experience in here, of a parent making sense of what buzzes my son. And that might be stuff that seems utterly pointless on a screen. And this desire to somehow limit or control that for fear that this screen existence is going to lead to a meaningless life. I think that's at the back of some of the fear that I as a parent feel. But then on the other hand, possibly my parents used to see me looking at Walt Disney comics and felt exactly the same way.
Yeah, I think that's a really fair point. And I think, I guess when I'm talking about futility in the book, it's not so much on that kind of individual level, because I think futility is an aspect of everyone's lives that we in many ways fear utility. In many ways, we try to avoid futility. And I think the example of your son is a really good one. I have the same feeling with my own son. Is that how can I avoid a kind of futile future for him?
He doesn't think it's futile.
No, exactly. Yeah. And again, that's even that I was saying earlier that the definition of utility is slippery. The definition of futility is similarly slippery. But I guess the point I'm trying to make in the book with futility, and it's something that comes up, you know, when teaching with students, is the kind of future that the kind of particularly younger generation, I suppose include myself in that to some in my early 30s, I kind of tack on to the younger generation. But the kind of future that many students that I teach are facing, you know, I talk to them in class and so many of them are in debt. So many of them are scared of the future, scared of ecological crises, fearful of, you know, the job market, fearful that they'll never be able to afford a house, and the kind of sense of futility that generates. And my argument in the book, and this is where I see futilitarianism as a hopeful endeavor, is to show that actually this is not a defect of our individual characters, that we're not somehow working hard enough, that we're somehow not clever enough. It's a manifestation of the way that our kind of economy and social structures have been have manifested in the last particularly four decades.
Well, you could argue that there is a bit more. Let's just look at our housing market in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. There's more concentration of ownership with one group. Yeah. I think people would agree with that. And I don't want to talk about the reasons why, but that's just one example of more concentration of power, and I guess a sense that people are struggling to catch up. But if we are to see, and I've sometimes more recently I've been thinking about this along other lines, and some of all the things that we've been talking about recently in the news that we have to do something about, it might be infrastructure, it might be coping with rotting pipes or whatever it is, it all involves spending probably more tax or more rates. And I begin to wonder, even though in some ways I'm quite conservative, that if we want a civil society, we've got to spend more money on it. We've been trying to get it on the cheap for the last couple of decades, generations, and we just can't. Unless we're prepared to accept that there are whole lots of things that don't look very nice, like beggars on the street or rotting pipes or whatever, but that's fine because, you know, our own personal wealth is all right.
Exactly. And I think that's, again, the kind of point I'm trying to get forward in the book is that's exactly, you know, the beggar in the street, the kind of rotting pipes, the disintegrating infrastructure is an example of this flip from utilitarianism into futilitarianism, where we couldn't argue that people aren't working hard enough, that people aren't trying their best, that people aren't, you know, trying to maximize their own utility. But in doing so, it seems that as we do that, it seems that our kind of collective social and economic conditions seem to get worse year on year. And obviously in the subtitle, I talk about neoliberalism, and my argument in the book is that this is an effect of neoliberalism, and particularly the dismantling of the kind of social state. And with that, dismantling of social solidarities between citizens. it's an idea
are you
that
like,
utility
Neil,
might
be. Are you like your Otago University colleague from the political science department who speaks with us quite a lot, Brian Roper?
Yes.
You think a Marxist state's the solution?
I'm not sure. Yeah, well, yeah. I share many similarities with Brian, I guess. We come from a similar, if not the same tradition, but similar, we share a similar area of research. But my argument really is the return of some kind of social state. I think, you know, ultimately, a kind of Marxist or communist state is a kind of ideal, but in my worldview. But I think at least at this stage is the return of some kind of social state, some sort of social democratic state, where we can, as you said, try and actually spend money on these things, try and at least pretend that we're trying to aim towards the kind of collective happiness or the happiness of the greatest number of people, because that has been completely obliterated in the last kind of 4 decades, and we've turned into a kind of atomistic society where instead of looking at our other citizens as kind of fellow citizens and that we should build a world together, we see others as kind of competitors, and we have to compete with one another for a kind of our various shares of the pie.
If we look back at the 20th century and attempts to bring about a Marxist solution in some societies, it almost created a more empty, materialistic, and often very brutal and almost certainly unhappy state for those who had to endure it.
Yeah.
So if that's not the solution, what is?
That's a big question.
Yeah, well, you've come up with a big topic for utilitarianism. That's a big topic.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Big word.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, my argument on that is really that, for one, we can argue that, and we can't get in here into the reasons why a Marxist state didn't work, say, in the Soviet Union or elsewhere. But the argument would be that because that didn't work, that doesn't necessarily mean that we should stay where we are at this very moment. The idea that we're in a house that is literally on fire, and we think of our planet as literally on fire, and our option should not be, well, you know, what, should we just stay in this house that's on fire?
What might happen, so, Neil, if say suddenly we all woke up, imagine that we're in this sort of deluded dream, and we wake, snap, what am I doing this for? Why am I here? Why am I at work? And why am I? And everyone asks themselves the same question at the same time and doesn't know what to do next. What then might happen?
Yeah, and this is what I get to in the kind of conclusion on the book. And I talk about the idea of what I call the futilitariat, a kind of play on, obviously, on the proletariat, but also a play on the idea of the precariat. And the idea with that is really trying to differentiate futilitarianism from nihilism. And I think there's an important difference between what I call futilitarianism in the book and what we might call nihilism. So for me, futilitarianism, I'm trying to bring the kind of futility of our everyday existence kind of to the fore to make us see it in some shape or form, not just for the sake of it, but to try and, with some hope, as you've just said, of the kind of awakening people, of generating ideas of how we might actually counter that meaninglessness, that does not actually end up in nihilism, that does not end up in a place where we just go, you know, the world's screwed, forget about it. Because nihilism is a kind of end in itself. And for me, I kind of increased awareness of futility can be the starting point of actually building something meaningful. Because futility is a thing that we share. It's an experience that so many of us share, to varying degrees. You know, there's lots of people whose experience of futility is a lot more brutal than others. But there are many who might be in a very comfortable position financially, and yet they may find that their job is pointless. They may think about the future of the planet and their children in it and think, wow, the kind of futility, I'm trying my best here, I'm trying to lead an ethical lifestyle, I'm trying to recycle and trying to cycle the work. And yet, you know, rainforests being destroyed or seas are being destroyed. What can I actually do as an individual? And my argument in here is that we actually can't do anything as individuals. It's only through coming together and uniting and becoming a kind of collective that we can actually start to try and think about a new world, to build a different world. And my argument is that we can build that world by joining together through the shared experience of futility. That can be the starting point of what I call in the conclusion of becoming common, a way of uniting people from different social kind of positions that we actually share an experience. And I call experience futility.
Neil, it's been fascinating talking with you. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Brian.
That's Neil Vallely. He's a political and social theorist. He works at Otago University. And his book, which I think is published by MIT, is called Futilitarianism, Neoliberalism and the Production of Uselessness, things which I think he is challenging rather than encouraging. But you can read the book